I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Adi Oladipo here. Thank you so much for downloading Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're here every single Tuesday live on TalkSport to myself and the great Gareth A. Davis. If you can't join us live, remember to subscribe to the Fight Night podcast channel. So much other great content there as well, such as Fight Night, Fight of My Life, and even the Mike Tyson story, the boy from Brownsville.
This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
Good afternoon. If you love your boxing and your MMA, then this is obviously the show for you. Fight Night Extra, where we bring you all the latest from the world of combat sports. Joining me, as always, TalkSport's Gareth A. Davis for a big, big show today. Coming up on the show, we are going to reflect on a knockout win for Savannah Marshall this weekend. She made light work, to be fair, of Femke Hermans, and has now set up a super fight, and it is a super fight with Clarissa Shields. We have the latest on the heavyweight division, 3 weeks out from Fury versus White, but still no sign of an undercard. We are going to hear from Frank Warren a bit later. Elsewhere, we've been told we'll know about when and where Usyk versus Joshua will happen in the next 2 weeks. We'll discuss where and when that fight is likely to happen. And we'll discuss the return of Gennady Golovkin and a bit of UFC chucked in as well. Don't go anywhere. This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
I think with the right tactics, Joshua has the capabilities to win the fight versus Usyk.
Yep.
Is he capable of winning? Yes. Do I think he's going to win? Probably not.
Do it himself. You saw him at the press conference. He had his own stare down with himself. It doesn't seem any kind of a problem for me and Tyson Fury going into this fight without Dillian White showing up or even having any comments to say.
And he is still the IBO WBA middleweight champion of the world.
Oh, busy show today, loads to get through. Let's welcome in Gareth A. Davis. Gareth, how are you, my man?
I'm very well, Addie. How are you?
Can't complain. Let's talk about Savannah Marshall getting the job done against Femke Hermans on the weekend. It now does set up that super fight. It is a super fight against Clarissa Shields. I did a video the other day on my YouTube, not plugging it, I promise. And I said, you know what? This is like the best of enemies. They need each other. I mean, we've seen Clarissa Shields go over to MMA. It hasn't quite worked out. The only reason she's going over to MMA because there's no one for her to fight. Savannah, I think Clarissa's brought out another side of Savannah that I love. She's speaking now. She's more confident. It's a fantastic matchup.
It is. And, you know, it takes two to tango. You need a dance partner, all those old adages. And I think, you know, it's an era-defining fight for the women in the middleweight division. It's 10 years in the making, going back to the World Championships, the amateur World Championships, when Savannah was champion age 20. And then a bitter disappointment, beaten by Maria Volnova in the first round. It was, I think, the last eight of the middleweights. in London in a home Olympics, and it was won by Clarissa Shields, who was a 17-year-old, and they've both gone on from there to go 12-0 each in their careers. You know, Clarissa, a three-weight world champion, barely put a foot wrong, barely lost a round, not a lot of knockouts in there. And as you say, Savannah gets her 10th knockout of her 12-fight career on Saturday night against Femke Hermans. Well, I said to you last week, didn't I? What she's got, long-rangey shots in her elusive way. And when she gets in close, she throws very dangerous hooks. And it's the perfect assimilation of the Fury technique. And she's a six-footer. She's very strong. So it sets up, on paper at least, puncher versus boxer, even though they're not quite that in reality in the ring. And as you say, the enmity is real. They're going to get their claws out at each other. We've seen it a couple of times. The other thing, which I'll also reiterate later in the show, we go into depth in this, is that Hannah Rankin went 10 rounds of Clarissa Shields as well. And Savannah dealt with her in seven rounds, dropped her and stopped her in seven. So, you know, it's a fascinating contest. I don't know if it's a super fight. It's a super fight in terms of bringing two brilliant middleweight women together. But is it a super fight in terms of it crossing over into the mainstream? Sky have done their very best to publicize it. It's not signed, sealed and delivered yet. I hope it's not pay-per-view, because I think if it is, a lot fewer people will see it. So I hope they leave it open to the mainstream.
Yeah, look, we'll talk about that more throughout the show, as you mentioned. Let's hope it gets done next. You can only milk the cow for so long. AJ Usyk, a date within 2 weeks. This is what Usyk's, and Usyk's manager have confirmed. We'll know a date, we'll know a venue. What can you tell us? Where's more likely? London?
Well, I hope so, because I don't want Saudi Arabia to be likely, Eddie. I'm very unhappy about it. It sends completely the wrong signals. I'm completely against it going to be in Saudi Arabia. I would go and report on it, obviously. But given that Saudi Arabia are bombing Yemen at the moment, I think that's wrong. I think it sends completely the wrong message for Alexander Usyk from his side. It you know, it seems ethically and morally wrong, even if the business reasons look good, because the site fee is £92 million. Greed should not overcome morality. And I think for the right messaging, if Alexander Usyk does take this fight and he wants to give out a humanitarian message for Ukraine, it's not going to be done well in Saudi Arabia.
Okay, some breaking news. I say breaking news. It was whispered over the weekend. He has now confirmed it. Lee Selby, former IBF featherweight champion, the Welsh Mayweather, I remember he went by, has called time on his career after that loss in Argentina. I think it is perfect time for him to retire. I remember seeing a social media post he did, and he said, look, when I was younger, I would have taken these kids. Now it's getting tougher. It's been such a good career. It really has. I mean, anyone that can become world champion, Commonwealth, European, and tick all those boxes is fantastic, right, to achieve that. I don't know why, but I'm a big fan of Lee, and I thought Lee could have gone on a bit further. Especially if he, I think there's a Josh Warrington fight that maybe changed my view and opinion on that. But overall, fantastic career. I mean, once you can become a world champion, you've ticked the boxes when it comes to boxing.
Yeah, look, when he set out in 2000 against Sid Razak and got his first victory at the age of 21, he's been a pro for 14 years, you know. Before that, he was the Welsh champion at, you know, as an amateur at featherweight and lightweight. I've got a feeling it was at heavyweight as well, but that might be a joke. He grew up in Splott. You know, he's had this same team around him the whole time. Chris Sanigar, one of the great stalwarts of British boxing, a great friend of mine going back many years, Bristolian, trained Lee all that period of time. Very, very talented boxer. I was there the night he beat Yevgeny Gradovich.
I was
in
there
London.
For that as well. Yeah, I was at the O2 Arena for that.
Good. What were you doing?
Just there as a fan.
Okay, there, see how life changes?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
And it was a brilliant performance. He boxed and skilled and outdid Yevgeny Gradovich in a brilliant performance. Got a technical decision in the eighth round. I think it might have been on a cut. An accidental head clash, that's right. But that was in his pomp. He'd beaten Rendell Monroe, Ryan Walsh, cleaned up all the British adversaries, was undefeated in 25, 26 fights, then went on to be undefeated in 27. You know, he still got the win against Ricky Burns. Yeah. I think that was at lightweight as well.
It was.
But I think, you know, the he looked like, when he lost to Josh Warrington, Allen Road, in May 2018, it looked like he'd lost some of his timing. He was struggling to make the weight. He's always been a tall featherweight. He's 5'8", 5'9". And I think, you know, Lee always had to outbox his opponents. He wasn't a power boxer. As you say, he was kind of the Welsh Mayweather, as he was renowned. You're right. And look, against Gustavo Daniel Lemos on Saturday night in Estadio Luna Park, Buenos Aires, Argentina, he had a... You've got to stop laughing when I speak Espanol. Because, you know...
I'm sorry.
In Estadio Luna Park, Buenos Aires, Argentina, against Gustavo Daniel Lemos on Saturday night, you know, he looked all right for a couple of rounds. Once Lemos started loading up, it just didn't look great. And then I think, you know, Lee's made the right decision at the right time. You know, he's from Barry Island, you know. He's a proud Welshman. He's a great character, Lee. He's so laid back. I remember sitting in London with him after he'd beaten Gradovich, and we had a lovely interview. And I went to his victory parade in Barry Island with the open top double-decker bus. And, you know, he's loved in his local area, and he's no big shakes. He's no, you know, he's a very, very mellow dude. And I'm just glad he's one of those people that's realized that it's time to give it up, Addy. And yeah, he'll be remembered as one of the Welsh greats. There's no question about it.
Yeah, indeed. I echo everything you said there. Look, fantastic fighter. But I guess the biggest thing, and you said this, even when he did have his wins, and look, some fantastic wins on the resume, he had to work for them because the power wasn't there. So it was sort of grueling 12 rounds, having to kind of keep the fighters off him all the time.
Well, I'm looking at his record from 15 onwards, right? Fight 15 to fight 32. Apart from the, you know, George Kambosos, remember, was a split decision loss. It just shows where he's at. Look what Kambosos did with Teofimo Lopez, you know. Although Kambosos, I think, coasted through that one in a lot of ways. But, you know, Ricky Burns, 12 rounds. Omar Douglas, 12 rounds. Warrington, 12 rounds. Ramirez, 12 rounds. Jonathan Victor Barros, 12 rounds. Eric Hunter, 12 rounds. 12 rounds, 12 rounds. Fernando Montiel, 12 rounds. Then, you know, 8 rounds, 9 rounds, 12 rounds, 12 rounds, 12 rounds. You go way back to, you know, like 17th fight to his 32nd fight. 10, 11 of those were 12-round fights. He had to work really hard for it. And I do know, just going through that with likes of Fernando Montiel, Jonathan Victor Barros, Josh Warrington, Eduardo Ramirez, all these guys, Ricky Burns, George Kambosos, that's a decent resume.
Mate, when you say it like that, very decent resume.
Very.
Underrated, that.
Do you know what? Lee came before social media and Twitter and all those things where people trumpet their success now, and they go out there and they milk the praise and they say, look what I've done. I signed this. I've got these new sponsors. Lee's not like that. And he's one of those old school boxers that never really promoted himself. And Chris Senegar, his trainer, is a very undersung, underappreciated piece of the furniture in British boxing, even in world boxing. And, you know, it's right that we're thinking about him today. And it's a shame we couldn't get him on the show. He's very hard to get an interview with, Lee. He's just, you know, he's asleep half the time or just chilling down by the beach in Barry Island.
Yeah, yeah. No, look, we've reached out to him. It reminds me of a lot of Joe Calzaghe, who, again, didn't like the limelight, didn't want it, didn't care for it. And maybe there's something in the Welsh waters. He doesn't really care for it as well. Do you think this is it? Boxing's one of those sports where most do want to come back for one more, two more. Do you think this is it with him?
No, I think it is. You know, he's got up to lightweight because he couldn't make featherweight anymore. He's not big enough or powerful enough at lightweight. No, that is it. That I cannot see him coming back. Who does he need to fight? You know, he's probably done very well for himself. Probably lives very, very, you know, within his means. And, you know, like I say, you don't know a lot about Lee Selby's life. He had some tragedy in his life as well. I remember being around him when that happened, and, you know, very sad with one of his parents passing away. But I think he'll be fine. I think it wouldn't surprise me to see him popping up, working a little bit with Chris Senegar and the Senegars in Bristol, helping out some boxers and doing some training. But we'll see Lee at events. I just hope he doesn't put on weight. You know, I tell you
don't,
what though.
Don't do it, Nassim Hamid, please, Lee. Don't.
No. That's a big call. But the funniest thing actually is about Lee. Even though he's got no Mexican in him, he doesn't half look like a Mexican.
Mate,
you know
how
that.
Badly does he?
Very badly indeed.
Incredible, honestly. He really does.
In a good way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry. To all the Mexicans out there, in a good way. Yeah. All right, you're listening to Fight Extra on TalkSport 2 with The Zone. Remember, stream boxing anytime, anywhere with DAZN.com. Still to come, we are going to be discussing the latest from Fury versus White and where and when we'll see Usyk versus Joshua. Plus, we're going to look ahead to the return of GGG and we'll squeeze in a bit of UFC as well. But up next, though, we're going to recap a big win for Savannah Marshall at the week.
I wouldn't know him but look, Clarissa Shields, two-time gold medalist. She's never put her foot wrong in the pro game. But that power is undeniable, and she'll have to be on her toes for the full-time rounds. It's a fascinating fight.
Welcome back to Fight Night Extra here on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, the great Gareth A. Davis. Yeah, good win, big win for Savannah Marshall, who destroyed Femke Hermans, didn't she, on the weekend. It now, I say, sets up the Shields fight. Nothing's been confirmed. We don't even know if it's even next. Has to happen next for me because it's a massive fight and we are trying to grow the sport of boxing, right? We are trying to grow it. And I think this fight is one of the biggest fights that can be made in the female sport today. Question, Gareth. I'm not going to ask you what's the bigger fight, because the bigger fight is Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano. I mean, that's a given. Easy. If you could only watch one, they're on at the same time, which one do you watch? Katie Taylor, Serrano, Savannah or Shields?
Well, you can stream both at the same time.
See what you're doing there.
So, well, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, you know, I tell you what, Savannah and Clarissa is less predictable than Amanda and Katie. But the thing is, I think, you know, because you know that I think Amanda and Katie are going to have a slugfest.
They're going to go to war, aren't they? They're going to go to war.
Yeah, they're going to go to war. But the Marshall Shields fight is going to be an intriguing fight that on paper looks like puncher versus boxer, given their records. But Clarissa really likes to let her hands go as well. And Savannah's accused of being pillow fists after her performance against Emma Cozen in Cardiff when she was there ringside and had their first real tete-a-tete for the cameras on Sky Sports, which was fascinating, as it was again on Saturday night. You know, and there's a lot of showmanship there, you know, and it's good to see Savannah have this kind of dance partner, frankly, because, look, the difference between Serrano and Taylor is they've both got massive followings. The Irish and the Puerto Ricans are going to come out in force, man, in Madison Square Garden. I'm looking forward to being there myself for both William Hill and The Telegraph.
Are you there? Then we should definitely go for a glass of whiskey. I'm going in there as well. We've got to meet up.
Definitely going. Yeah. Definitely going. Obviously, it's on DAZN as well, isn't it? So,
it is.
You know, it's a really big night. But I think, you know, if Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano was here, would it massively capture the public imagination? I'm not sure.
No.
So
hasn't it? Savannah and Clarissa really has.
Yeah, I think it has. I think, you know, there's still a build going on, but they need to do it now. It's an era-defining fight. It's an industry fight. You know, the women's game is still evolving. I had conversations about this earlier today with a group of students from Sunderland University, with the brilliant Neil Farrington, who's their lecturer. And I was talking to them about MMA and boxing, and people were asking about, you know, did Marshall and Shields, or sorry, did Marshall and and Femke Hermans go a little bit under the radar on Saturday night. I don't think it did. I think it got quite a lot of publicity. It's just that women's boxing is evolving now to a point where it is fascinating. And I really hope that they don't put Marshall and Shields on. And it will be in the summer. It does look like it's next. I hope they don't put it on pay-per-view on the Sky platform, Maddie, because I think they I hope they really publicise it and make it prevalent for the British sporting public. And I think also it helps that Clarissa Shields may well fight in the PFL here in London in August as well, which may help the Professional Fighters League in MMA, because obviously Shields is trying to become a mixed martial arts champion as well. So I think both women have the potential to be great in their sport. You know, they're both undefeated in 12. They've barely put a foot wrong. But the fascinating thing is, for all Clarissa's physicality, you just wonder about the power of her punches. But boxing has a wild and woolly way of surprising us, and you just don't know, because Savannah hasn't really been hit by anyone hard.
Yeah.
So who knows? I could see either girl going down in this fight. On Saturday night, I made Savannah favorite. When you look at Hannah Rankin, the opponent for Savannah when she won the WBO middleweight title, you know, she dropped and stopped her in seven. Rankin went 10 rounds with Clarissa Shields. You know, Savannah set Femke Hermans up beautifully with that left hook. She worked her into the corner. Hermans was very tricky up to that point, switch hitting and being awkward and being on the move on her bike. But I just think Marshall has grown a lot. And you know, I remember when I couldn't get a word out of her 10 years ago, Annie, and she at least does decent interviews now, which is great.
Yeah, she does. I agree on that point as well. Now, it's almost like Clarissa's brought her out of this shell, if I'm honest with you. You mentioned Sky and it shouldn't go on box office. Is that the problem they're having right now? I mean, look, just be honest, this fight should be announced. They should have got in the ring, and then Ben Shalom should have announced this fight's going to happen this date. Both are not injured. We can go. Is there a problem whereby, you know, Clarissa's openly spoken about the money that Sky are paying her, and that in order to kind of recoup that, they have to put it on box office?
I don't think so. I think they've got large coffers. I think, you know, I don't think it's a box office event. It's a box office fight, but it's not a box office event, if you know what I mean.
I do.
So it's a difficult one. Look, women's boxing is shifting the paradigm at the moment. And I have to be honest about it and not overdo it and not do the Eddie Hearn sell on Serrano and Taylor. Look, Jake Paul's put his weight behind it. Eddie Hearn's got a lot of influence. You know, it's a very important historic fight because Katie Taylor is a pathfinder in the sport. Yeah. I would compare her to Ronda Rousey in boxing, 100%, in MMA.
100%.
You know, she's very similar, apart from personality, that she has shifted the way people look at women's boxing. And she's done it through a lot of different avenues. The brilliant documentary about her, the way she is. But there's a long way to go in women's boxing, but it's no longer a Layla Ali fighting a group of has-beens or nobodies or waitresses, cleaners and office workers. It's no longer Christy Martin out on her own. It's no longer Jane Couch out there on her own. You know, it's that there is shape and a bit of depth to the divisions now. But we're nowhere near where the depth is in men's boxing.
Could it?
And we have to be honest about it. I'm not criticizing women's boxing. I love women's boxing. I'm one of those who is an advocate of it. So could it what?
Could it go on? Say that, you know, look, they always seem to find a pay-per-view event. We saw that with Amir Khan versus Kell Brook. Could it go on a co-main on a pay-per-view, or does it need to stand alone itself as the main event?
What, Marshall Shields?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's on a pay-per-view event.
Yeah, co-main on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, co-main on a pay-per-view event works perfectly. I mean, I did ask Ben Shalom that on Saturday night on our Fight Night show, our podcast, World Podcast nominated awards, or was it British National Awards podcast nominated on to
an award, series an of award at least, yeah.
Yeah, I'm nominated. But I asked him about maybe putting Amir Khan as being talked about as wanting to fight again. You know, maybe something like that or a Chris Eubank fight would be perfect for it, I think. But yeah, that's just my view. Just, you know, that's how I see it.
No, I fully understand as well. All right, you'll listen to Fight Extra on TalkSport 2 with DAZN. Remember, stream boxing anytime, anywhere with DAZN.com. Still to come, we are going to look ahead to the return of Gennady Golovkin, and we'll squeeze a bit of UFC in there too. Up next, though, we'll get the latest from the heavyweight division.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If Joshua can control the areas of the ring, push Usyk back, make him skirt around, make him break his base, attack when he breaks his base, he's going to have a lot easier entries, a lot safer entries, and he'll land cleaner more often.
His lawyer received the contract and signed the contract, got Dillian to sign it after advising him. In that contract, all the things they've asked for since are not in there. As long as he's there on the night, as long as he weighs in, as long as he's there on the night, we'll move ahead with him.
Let's hope he is there on the night. Dillian White, no show in the press conference. Look, there is another press conference coming up. He will be there for that one, surely. I mean, we hope he's there anyway. It's the big fight. It's the biggest British heavyweight fight of all time. It really is. 90,000 people are going to attend Dillian White, or should I say, let me do it correctly, Tyson Fury versus Dillian White. Let's hear from Tyson Fury's promoter, Frank Warren, who's asked, why there's been so many issues in setting this fight up in the first place?
It was a negotiation period, and terms weren't reached. If you can't reach terms, you then go to purse bids. And the purse bid, the winning promoter gets rights. He gets the sole rights for the fight. He gets the rights to the build-up for the fight of all the filming. He gets the rights to sell the fight around the world, sell the tickets, everything. It's not another negotiation. That's it. You send the contract to the lawyer. His lawyer received the contract and signed the contract, got Dillian to sign it after advising him. In that contract, all the things they've asked for since are not in there. Not in there at all. Not one of the things he's asked for is in the contract that he advised his client to sign. Not one thing. In the contract, it says economy tickets, because that's the standard thing for a purse bid, not a private plane. It doesn't say about escrows, nothing in there about escrow accounts. Nothing in there about ticket allocations, not a thing. And we were quite willing to make this a bit smoother. Of course, you know, we'd sort something out with tickets. Private plane, I don't want to give him a private plane, but when it was he's not going to show up for the press conference, give him a private plane. Escrow, we'll put the money in escrow. We agreed to two things, then they want another 10. So it went nowhere. So it's all well documented. And I was on TalkSport recently with the lawyer. I thought made himself look a complete prat. asking for stuff that's not there. We are where we are. All we expect now is the contract that we got to be honoured. And he has obligations in that contract to be honoured. And if he doesn't honour them, we'll sort that out after the fight. As long as he's there on the night, as long as he weighs in, as long as he's there on the night, we'll move ahead with it. But we have honoured our contract. And I prove a point. If we hadn't honoured it and been honourable in all what we're doing, you heard that, lawyer. Do you not think you'd be suing us?
Now, for more of that interview with Frank Warren, head over to TalkSport Boxing on YouTube. Frank Warren in conversation with TalkSport's James Savunja. It's all a bit of a mess in it, to be honest with you. Look, the fight's going to happen. I'm pretty sure of it's going to happen. Not 100%, I can't give you that. I'll give you 90. 95 is the best I can go, but it will happen. Tyson Fury will defend his lineal and WBC heavyweight titles against Dillian White, April 23rd, Wembley. Gareth A. Davis will be part of TalkSport's coverage of that one. Remember, it is live and exclusive on TalkSport. I guess, to be fair, look, Gareth, you would know about contracts and what goes on behind the scenes in boxing. It's difficult, isn't it, to make some of these big fights? There is so much that goes involved with it. And I guess that's why sometimes some of the big fights just fall through the cracks.
Look, there are little side deals that go on once the big deal's been done. Like you say, do you think it's 95%? According to my brain, it's 100%.
Oh, okay, good.
Because they've signed a contract to have the fight. They've sold the tickets. Jeffrey Bence is going to find his client heavily sued if he doesn't turn up and have this fight. They've signed the fight at $8 million with $4 million from the escrow if he beats Tyson Fury. He'd be absolutely committing career suicide if he does not take that fight, because anyone that doesn't take a fight when they could win the heavyweight championship of the world and there's £6 million guaranteed to them just to step into the ring, yeah? To come to the weigh-in and step into the ring. All this stuff about the contractual obligations around turning up for press conferences and this, that, and the other. Look, it's become a game. And we heard all that attrition between Frank Warren and White's lawyer, Jeffrey Benz, on the Jim White show. It was frankly staggering. I think, that the two sides are in such a disagreement. At the end of the day, it's a boxing match, for the heavyweight championship of the world. And as I say, Dillian White doesn't turn up. He's finished. It's career suicide. So he's going to be there. It's going to happen. And it's just going to be great fun. And do you know what? Oh. I'm on the Zoom right now and I can see Mr. Lee Selby. I don't know if I can bring him in, but I can see him. He's already talking to me. We've been waxing lyrical, Addy, about him for 10 minutes while he was having a snooze probably in Barry Island somewhere. But
you know, it's good. Look, Lee, welcome in, Lee. We are, in a weird way, Lee, I'm happy. I'm happy and also disappointed that you called it quits. Happy because I think, you know what? He's had a great career, fantastic career.
Yeah.
Disappointed because we just love to see your box. Love to see your box. He's still the Welsh Mayweather. And we see a bit of that brilliance.
The Welsh Mayweather. I think the boxing news dubbed me after one of my fights.
They did.
And the amount of stick I got for that. People think I was calling myself the Welsh Mayweather. I wouldn't do that. But
I would rather call you the Welsh Mexican.
Or you could call Mayweather the American Lee Selby.
Either way.
But I was pretty upset after reading the comments from my retirement. I sort of felt upset. And then I thought to myself, I should be celebrating my retirement, not being upset and down.
Yeah.
So I've changed the way of thinking, and now I'm just looking back at my career and sort of enjoying it rather than being upset.
And you deserve to enjoy it, because I mean, me and Gareth were just going through some of your career highlights and some of the names you've fought, and it's been a fantastic career. It really has. I mean, how difficult was it to come to that decision? For fighters, I always feel like it's so hard just to say, I am done. Maybe I'm not as good as I once was 5-6 years ago. And the guy in front of me 5-6 years ago, I'd have wiped the floor with. How difficult is that decision?
To be honest, it is difficult. But again, I know myself, and I know that the last two opponents I boxed, they were near enough 10 years younger than me. And 10 years ago, I would have destroyed a pair of them. I would have beat them both. I know I would have. And that was the deciding factor. And another thing, if I had lost a fight when I was coming through, I wouldn't have shown my face. I would have been too embarrassed. I wouldn't have spoke to nobody. I wouldn't have answered the phone. But after the last two defeats, I was like sort of just normal. I weren't upset how I would have been. And then that was another deciding factor.
It was a sign, yeah.
In my retirement. And another thing, when I was coming through, honestly, I would have died in the ring. I would have rather died than lose, and I would have killed the opponent. Whereas now, if I had hurt my opponent, I couldn't live with myself. I'd be distraught, and I would rather lose than obviously die. Now I got a family and people depending on me. So my mentality changed a bit, and I knew it was just time to hang him up.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was waxing lyrical at the top of the show, Lee, when we talked about it in the first section. When you're probably, I know you're so laid back, you probably have a siesta every afternoon, but just what a pleasure it was. You're such a boxing man through and through, and I remember when we sat up outside Hyde Park one day after press conference when you'd won the world title and. And I vowed to you, I was coming down to your victory celebration through Barry Island with the open top bus. It was I'll never forget that day because.
Oh, it was amazing.
It was. Even you had all your family on the bus.
Yeah.
And you're so modest. I've never seen you really emotional, but you were really emotional that day. Oh, yeah, it was amazing. The whole town turned out, didn't it?
I think Chris Flanagan is rubbing off on me. He's very emotional and like and passionate. I looked to the back of the bus and he was there with like tears streaming down his face.
Do you look that Gradovich victory, and that's what you're talking about, obviously winning the IBF featherweight title. Do you look at that as the best performance? I mean, you've had some good ones. Obviously, when you win a world title, automatically that's the one that springs to mind for people. Like, you know, that's the day, O2 Arena, that was it. But what was your best performance, you think, C?
Well, to be honest, my best performances were in the gym with nobody watching. And I struggled. Well, I never brought the best out of me in the fights. Always in the gym. I've been like all across the world, all around America, sparring with top fighters. And I barely lost a round. So my best fights have sadly been in the gym. But the ones in the ring, I think the standout ones were the Gradovich fight, obviously, because it was a world title against an undefeated champion. And the Martin Lindsay one in Belfast, that was another one that stood out.
Can I ask, Addy, that I was there on the... I picked you to beat Josh Warrington. It's a lot closer fight than people remember, you know, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think Josh has a very judge-pleasing style.
Yeah.
Is what I've noticed over
does.
Time.
Yes,
he does. He does. Were there signs in 2018 that you would have been 31 then? And featherweights traditionally, and you're a very tall featherweight, you're 5'9", aren't you? 5'8", 5'9", maybe 5'10". 5'8 and a half, okay. generally, featherweights, when they become men at 30, really do begin to struggle with the weight.
Yeah.
They genuinely do.
It's the same with all the lower weights, really.
Exactly. And do you think at that point in your career that night you'd really begun, your body had begun to tell you, do you know what, I don't know if I can weigh 126 anymore, you know?
I think before then. And to be honest, looking back, although it's easy to say now and difficult at the time, My first defense when I boxed Fernando Montiel out in Phoenix, Arizona, I won the same fight as I was winning the title. I think I'd outgrown the weight then. So looking back, I should have moved up after the first defense. But after training so hard, well, working my whole life to win a world title, and nobody give me any favors, it would have been difficult to vacate the belt and expect somebody to give me a shot at another title.
When you see people selling themselves on social media now.
Not for me.
No, I know that. I said that to Addy. Oh, look, I know you pretty well, don't I? Yeah. We've spoken many times. And I said, the thing is with Lee, he's just a boxing man through and through.
I'm like old school in my ways outside the ring. And in the boxing, like years ago, they didn't have all that rubbish. They'd shake hands before the fight. they're boxing to sell the tickets. They'd fight and they'd shake hands afterwards, and that's how it should be. Now you've got now. I'm leaving the sport at the right time. It's turning into a circus.
it's does it upset crazy. You that it does it upset you a little bit that it is a circus?
Yes, because like I'm like you said, like I'm a boxing guy through and through, a traditionalist, and that's what I like to see. I don't like all this trash talking to an extent. Well, there's trash talking, and then you got Muhammad Ali who did with class. There's a big difference. Like I can sit and watch Muhammad Ali talk all day. I'm watching fight all day for that matter. But you do with class like that, or this trash talking now when they just it's embarrassing.
Lee, you ticked all the boxes, right? British, Commonwealth, European, yeah. World champion. I'm only going to ask you this next question just because you said that a lot of your best work was in the gym, and a lot of fighters talk about leaving their stuff in the gym. Do you look at your career and think maybe I could have achieved a bit more? I think you've done everything, but because of what you said, I'm asking that question.
I could have, yeah. I think I could have. And I've done a lot of it on my own, like the training and like the diet and the making weight. I've just done it all on my own. If I see some fighters on like the social media, they got like a whole team around them, like nutritionists, dietitians, people cooking their food every day. And I didn't get there. I sort of done it mainly on my own. Obviously, Tony Borg's been in the gym with me every day. And Chris Sanigar played a massive part, but a lot of it has been done on my own back.
Has Tony Borg lost any weight during lockdown or not?
I won't tell him that.
No, don't tell him that.
What are you trying to say? He's fat?
Gareth.
I think he's PHAT fat. Very cool.
The new version of fat. Lee, look, before we let you go, I really appreciate you coming on. What next, Lee? A bit of training, maybe? What's the plan?
So, in my 27 years of boxing, I've only seen a handful of decent, decent coaches. And I emphasise the word coaches because that's all they're coaches. You don't see nobody teaching boxing. Mm. Like just the fundamentals, how to stand and how to deliver a correct punch. So I'd love to pass on what I think I know to the younger generation and give back to the children of my town and the people in my town and give back a bit. So I'd like to get into coaching. I'm not sure about professionally, but like the amateurs and the youngsters, because they look up to me and they respect me. And they'll train and they'll listen.
Lee, I want to get your thoughts on your previous division. I know you were sparring Kiko Martinez in the lead up to his fight with Josh Warrington. I don't know if you watched the fight, but if you didn't, what's your thoughts just on the featherweight division in itself right now? Lee Wood has almost come from nowhere to be probably maybe behind Navarrete, the best in the division. What's your thoughts on Lee and Josh right now?
First of all, I missed the Warrington and Kiko Martinez fight. As I was a little bit busy over in Argentina myself. I had plans elsewhere. But the division has always been a great division. And it's great to see so many British fighters like ruling the roost.
Mm.
And Lee Wood is a great fighter. And I've heard stories about him punching very hard in the gym. And my brother boxed Lee Wood twice in the ABA finals and he beat Lee Wood twice, and then Michael Conlon he boxed also. They just had a great fight and he beat Michael Conlon three times.
Well, your brother Andrew, by the way, who's special fighter, special fighter Andrew.
And but it's sad to see Andrew looking at retirement at such an early age and them guys doing so great when he could have been in the mix himself.
How can I just jump in and ask about the division as well? So when this era ends, first of all, do you think, if you were in Warrington's position and Wood's position, would you take your fans over from Leeds and fight in the estates, in the United States against a Leo Santa Cruz or a Manuel Navarrete? Or would you take the Lee Wood fight? Because there seems to be a real appetite for all British clashes at the moment. And secondarily, who's going to emerge in those slightly younger guys than you as the best featherweight of that era post you?
If I was Wood, either Wood or Warrington, I would have to be a world champion. I would have to go where the money is. And like Warrington sort of, I think he's peaked. And he's sort of a stage where like he needs to just grab as much as he can. And Wood, I think because he's a bit younger, he can just do what he likes. But after winning the title, myself personally, I'd go where the money was.
So where do you think the money is then? Do you think it's Wood and Warrington because they've got such big followings?
Possibly, because I think they're both with Matchroom. They both got big followings, and that'd fill a stadium in the UK. But then you got Neil Santa Cruz, who's like a massive worldwide star. He's been around for a long time, and now would be the time to catch him.
I think Warrington will struggle against Leo Santa Cruz and Navarrete myself.
I think he's struggling against Santa Cruz because of his size and, yes, and his work rate.
But Navarrete?
To be honest, I haven't seen much of him. I haven't seen a lot of him. But Wood, like in his last fight against Conlon, and any other fighter, you could argue a case to pull him out. But because he can punch, he's always in the fight. And he pulled around last minute.
Yeah.
So he's always in a fight against anybody.
Daddy?
Pardon?
Did he surprise you, Lee Wood, Lee? Like, I mean, he's almost come from nowhere. He got the Kanju win, which was a big win at Fight Camp, but no one expected it. You mentioned Michael Conlon, and he had a fantastic amateur record, so we kind of expected Michael Conlon to do what he does. Josh, because of obviously the fights against you and Frampton, we expected it. Lee Wood maybe sort of just risen to the top and no one expected to see it.
I expected it. Like I said, I seen him box my brother. When I was going to the Ingles gym sparring with Kid Galahad, I seen him training and working there. He's always been a talented fighter. He was just waiting for that break, and he got the break, and he took it. He took it with both hands.
If you have to pick one, Lee Wood, Josh Warrington, whether it be the City Ground, Ellen Road, who are you fancying?
I'd have to pick. It depends which Warrington turns up.
You was about to say Lee Wood. You was about to say Lee Wood.
But then Wood's got that power. If I had to put money on that, I'd have to back Warrington.
Lee, really appreciate it coming on. Just for the work rate. I'm with you. That work rate's ridiculous. I think we saw it again against Kiko Martinez a couple of weeks ago. Lee, honestly, enjoy retirement. Hopefully we can get you on a lot more. People need to hear from you, Lee. Your knowledge of the sport's fantastic. I mean, if you are going to start your training, which I'm sure you will do, fingers crossed you produce some fantastic talent down in Wales as well. Lee Selby, former IBF featherweight champion, just jumped on Zoom. Fantastic. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for downloading our Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're back every single Tuesday for more great content. And if you miss us, make sure you subscribe to Fight Night to catch up on all our other episodes.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.